The SparkFile podcast may contain profanity and other adult content.
Please use your discretion.
When I bump into something that inspires me, I dump it in my SparkFile.
SparkFile.
To be something that I want to make or how I want to be, I pump it in my SparkFile.
SparkFile.
I jump into my SparkFile.
Welcome to the Spark File, your one-stop hobby shop for creative inspiration.
I'm Laura Camion.
And I'm Susan Blackwell. If you're joining us for the first time, welcome. If you're joining us for the 17 millionth time, welcome. You may be asking yourself, what exactly is a Spark File? Where do I get one? What do I file in it? These are such good questions, and we have got answers.
A Spark File is a place where you consistently collect all of your inspirations and fascinations.
But here's the deal. We are makers who make all kinds of things.
Goofball. But if you're like us and making stuff all the time, or want to be making stuff all the time, you know the wellspring of inspiration can run a little dry.
So we're on the lookout for fresh ideas, images, and inspiration that spark our creativity and pique our curiosity, things that inspire us to get up off of our asses and make things like this podcast.
Or a life-changing adventure in the woods.
Or a mess of creativity that makes the world a better place.
Oh, every episode we're going to reach into the spark file and exchange some sparks. And from time to time, we're going to talk to some makers who spark us too.
And if you're not careful, you might find some peace inside the chaos. So without further ado, let's open up
the spark file.
Camion.
Blackwell.
Can we take a second and chitty chat?
We can.
And reflect upon the Spark File New Year 2020 Creativity Workshop and live podcast.
Damn, that weekend was good.
It was. Doing something like that, it's a big lift, and it takes a lot of preparation, a lot of logistics, a lot of thought.
Yeah.
There's a lot that goes into it. And then you hope that all of that work will pay off.
I think it did.
Spoiler alert.
Spoiler.
It was
phenomenal.
I don't mean to like break my arm patting us on the back. It was magnificent. Like, what a great group of people.
Incredible group of people.
Could not have assembled a better group of individuals.
So good. I'm on the lookout for a word, though, to describe that extreme exhaustion and absolute invigoration at the same time, because by the end of the weekend it was like we left it all on the court, you know. Everybody there gave everything they had, and I think we all felt like it all spilled out of us and we did the work, and we were exhausted for having done the work and so freaking invigorated.
Oh,
like,
gosh.
I bounced out of there on a cloud of energy that has floated, you know, for days on end afterwards.
Floated it's been, you into 2020.
Absolutely. And I don't know of a word that describes that combination of feelings, but I've had that before. I've had that experience before.
I have described that feeling to my friend Yoni, who's a psychiatrist. Uh-huh. And I'm like, what is that? And he goes, it sounds like you're describing a hypomanic state. Where he's like,
great.
It can feel like you could lift a car off a toddler. Like you can feel like you've really expended yourself and it can feel amazing. He's like, it's problematic when it goes too far and you like wake up on Fifth Avenue not wearing pants and wondering how you got there.
Yeah.
That's it at its extreme.
I wouldn't say that was it. I just think there's something to being physically tired, but mentally inspired.
Oh,
do you know what I mean?
More poetic than,
and also maybe not a mental illness.
Pantless on for that.
Yeah.
It was a joy from beginning to end, and I feel like it is a. I do think part of that is we were ready to rock. Like we created the foundation for great work. Mm-hmm. But again, I turn back to each of those individuals that for whatever reason were called to be there.
That's right.
To a person.
That's right.
Magnificent.
In Incredible.
Yeah.
And then we had the special guests from Freestyle Love Supreme.
Come on.
There are those interviews that we, not interviews, conversations that we have where it feels like we could talk for 10 more hours and just be tip of the iceberg.
And due respect to the love of your life,
West A.
I think you were ready to marry Anthony Venizelle. And due respect
I think
to his-
I freaked him out because I was like, oh my God, I think I'm in love with you. And the look on his face changed. I'm not kidding. And I was like, not in a weird way. The more I say now, the weirder it's going to get. So let's leave it at that. But your brain is so, brain. I mean, he's a handsome man, but his brain is
he's wonderful.
Phenomenal.
As is Chris Shockwave Sullivan. The whole thing.
That's right.
And coming out of that, we are running like a pilot program for people that have been through that curriculum with the Spark File Accountability Collective, which is a crew of people. People applied for it and
so cool.
A handful were accepted.
Of the brave.
Like the astronaut program.
The prepared.
But we've been rocking creative accountability with this mighty crew of people. And the things they're making, again, could not have hand-selected a better group of people. I feel so lucky.
It's an honor. I was just going to say that. It's an honor. It's a privilege. It feels, I feel lucky as well.
Yeah.
I feel.
Aww. You're getting misty over there. Should we get to sparking?
I want to know your spark.
Good, because I'm going to lay it on you.
Oh my gosh. That's exciting.
This is a mighty spark. And so I'm going to try not to make this a 3-hour episode of the Spark File podcast. I'm going to do my best.
Okay.
Here we go. The following is a true story. I was at this thing a while back and I met this guy. I'm going to call him Dave. And I said, hi, I'm Susan. And he said, hi, I'm Dave. It's nice to meet you. Boy, can you believe what's happening in the world? It's out of control. I mean, I can't believe this is real. I'm just freaking out. Can you believe that this is our world? And I said, it's nice to meet you, Dave. I'm not exaggerating. That was it. That was the exchange.
Wow.
And even though I had just met Dave, I recognized this look in his eyes. I've seen that look in a lot of people's eyes. The look when someone is overwhelmed by the injustice in the world, or maybe for the first time in their life, they're fearing for their personal freedoms.
Yikes.
Or they're overwhelmed by some catastrophic weather event that is happening. And the fear and overwhelm had Dave turned inside out in front of me, a complete stranger you just met. And even though I just met Dave, because I am the weirdo that is me, I reached over, I put my hand on his heart, and I said, Dave, let me ask you a question. How many times have you initiated this conversation? I just met you. I don't know you. But if I may be so bold, I'd like to offer you something. And you can always tell me to go fuck myself, Dave. But I think I know what's going on here.
Oh.
Sometimes I can't believe that I don't get punched in the face more. I was like, Dave, I think you're addicted to this conversation. I think you're addicted to this, like, this role. And you talk a lot about it and you stew on it. But I think there's other options. There are things you could actually do.
Shit. And he didn't punch you?
He didn't, but we'll get back to that in a minute. The title of my spark is, with a large group, little numbers can make a huge difference. Spark sources include several things, including a story by NPR reporter Laurel Wamsley, whose name I'm obsessed with, a story on Refinery 29 by Makita Rivas, a bunch of other stuff I'm going to mention, and a tweet from Daniel Kilby. His Twitter handle is @Euro_trashed, and it read, I'm a little late listening to the latest Creativity Sparks app of the Spark File, but the story of the quilters coming together to complete the $5 quilt reminds me of the crafting bees happening around Australia, making pouches, etc., for animals displaced by the bushfires.
Oh.
This tweet, as of this recording, this tweet just came in.
I was going to say, I didn't see it.
I don't think you were tagged on it, but I
That's okay.
loved it. And of course, I immediately Googled and learned what I could.
Amazing.
As everyone knows, parts of the world are literally on fire, figuratively, literally. Literally, there are fires ravaging many parts of Australia. There has been a loss of human life, a loss of property, and animals and natural ecosystems have been devastated. And when something like this happens, Camion, I am bereft. I know I'm not alone in this. Seeing animals that have been killed, injured, burned, orphaned, seeing people's lives who have been turned upside down, devastated, it's so hard to process and it can be so upsetting. And I feel so helpless when something like this is happening on the other side of the world.
That's right.
But this is why I was so sparked by Daniel's tweet. It turns out that crafters from around the world are doing what they can with the resources they have available to help.
I love crafters.
There are organizations like Animal Rescue Collective Craft Guild. I'm going to say it again. Animal Rescue Collective Craft Guild. It's completely volunteer run that provide clear instructions on how to make rescue crafts. Their tagline, creating, sewing, building, and designing for animal rescue.
Oh.
According to their Facebook page, which is facebook.com/ARFSN crafts, arfs and crafts. They rely on the amazing skills of volunteers to produce pouches, wraps, and more for orphaned wildlife. This organization works closely with the carers who need the supplies so they can provide information about what is most needed at the time. As of the recording of this podcast, and this will change, Joey pouches of all sizes and styles are most needed, whereas koala mittens are not needed anymore. In case you were wondering, they have enough koala mittens.
Amazing.
They also provide patterns and instructions on how to make what is needed. So if you sew, they desperately need bat wraps, Joey pouches of all sizes, and hanging Joey pouches. So a Joey is a baby. It could be a baby kangaroo. It could be a baby wombat or whatever.
Have you told Nancy Blackwell?
I haven't.
Okay, I'm just curious. Mom, we need help.
It's like the craft signal, the light that illuminates the skies over Gotham.
I love it.
Crocheters, they need your bird's nest making skills. Wow. Crocheted nests of various sizes are needed for orphaned birds and small rodents. Also, blankets. Knitters, if you can knit, you can make some sweet blankets and sweaters that'll keep their fellows warm. They have some great knitting patterns that can be whipped up for joeys, lambs, penguins, and other animals. Knitted joey pouches are also needed. They also have approved patterns that meet the requirements and preferences of the folks providing care for the animals. So for instance, if you're sewing a hanging joey pouch, picture sort of a purse with a strap. It needs to be sewn on a machine. There can't be corners. It needs to be rounded so that their little faces don't get stuck in the corners. Aww. And the interior seams need to be finished so that the little claws don't get tangled up in threads inside the pouch.
Aww.
The interior liners must be natural fibers, but they can't be wool. You want to use fabric that you put next to a baby's skin. They have clear patterns and instructions for all of this. But this got me thinking about other ways that creatives and makers can use their gifts and crafts and passions and self-expression to be of service or to support social justice or express political activism. And that is my spark this week. I'm calling it Making Change. Get it? It's a pun.
Aww, okay. I love it. Making Change.
So this got me thinking of my sister's mother-in-law, Audrey Kanzler. Audrey, I don't think you're listening, but if you are, hi.
Hi, Audrey.
Audrey is a knitter. And she knits with her group, the Knitwitters. They are a not-for-profit group of about 25 women who meet twice monthly at the First Congregational Church of Twinsburg, Ohio.
Oh, I love it. Knitwitters.
These volunteers produce hundreds of baby blankets, hats, and booties for the preemies at the local hospital, afghans and socks for hospice patients, mittens and hats for local school children, and scarves for those in the service. And so I reached out to Audrey, and I was like, Audrey, tell me more. What do you love about it, and why did you decide to do it?
Yeah.
So she said, initially, I went to Knitwitters to provide transportation for a blind friend. Come on, Audrey.
I mean, how? Audrey.
Come on. She was awesome. A beautiful knitter. I decided I should try my hand. I had not knitted in 20 years, and she had to teach me 3 times how to cast on. Truthfully, what sparked me to get involved was realizing I could make bed socks for vets, which were greatly needed, and the willingness of the more seasoned knitters to help me learn how to knit. I love being part of this group because of the incredible volume of items that are produced, but even more important, it is therapeutic. Sitting around with a bunch of sympathetic, kind-hearted listeners is pretty good.
Wow.
Now, this in turn reminded me of a conversation that I had a few years ago with Audrey and my mom, which led me to the website knittedknockers.org.
Knitted Knockers.
That's right.
Oh, I think I might know what this is. Oh, I can't wait. Tell
me.
There you
go. So Knitted Knockers are special handmade breast prosthesis for women who have undergone mastectomies or other procedures to the breast.
That's right.
Traditional breast prosthetics are usually heavy, expensive, sweaty, and uncomfortable, and they typically require special bras or camisoles with pockets and can't be worn for weeks after surgery. Knitted Knockers, on the other hand, are soft, comfortable, beautiful, and when placed in a regular bra, they take the shape and feel of a real breast. Their special volunteer knitters provide Knitted Knockers free to those requesting them.
Amazing.
So
incredible.
They have a great website with tons of resources on it. Mm. And on the website, I learned that the spark for Knitted Knockers came from a woman named Barbara Demarest. I hope I'm pronouncing your name correct, Barbara. In 2011, she was diagnosed with breast cancer and she had to have a mastectomy. After the surgery, she called the local cancer society and asked about acquiring prosthesis. And the woman replied, "Oh, honey, you can't put anything on that scar for at least 6 weeks." But she had to get back to her work and she had her life to live. And she said that was the first time she cried.
Oh,
through the whole cancer.
Oh,
yep,
my gosh.
That was the first time she cried.
Barb.
The next week at the doctor's office, she picked up a brochure for a typical silicone prosthesis, and the doctor saw her holding the brochure and said, "Most women are not real happy with that as a solution. It's too hot, it's heavy, and it's expensive." And then he asked her if she knitted. And he showed her a picture of a knitted knocker and a link to a place to get the pattern. She emailed that pattern to her dear friend, super knitter Phyllis, and that Sunday, Barbara stuck a sock in her bra, wore a little loose jacket, and ventured out to church. And Phyllis delivered two beautiful knitted knockers to her in a Victoria's Secret bag.
I'm gonna cry.
She took them into the bathroom stall, stuck them in a bra. They were light, pretty, soft. They fit into her own bra perfectly. And she said she knew. There's her spark. She knew right then that she wanted to make these available to other women going through the same situation. CAMS.
I love these ladies so much.
Yes.
I'm honestly.
We love these ladies. CAMS is crying hot tears. The tingle lets you know it's working, CAMS. She asked her to help Cammy.
I'm going to need a Kleenex.
So Barbara asked her doctor if they would hand them out if she could provide them with a regular stock of knitted knockers. And the doctor said they absolutely would. Barbara's goal was to provide free, accessible, beautiful knitted knockers to anyone who needed them in her county. And with the help of an army of volunteers, she has met that goal. But no one group can meet that kind of demand. So the purpose of her site, knittedknockers.org, is to have a one-stop place where anything you want to know about these knitted knockers can be found. Barbara says, one of the nurses said to me, "I sure wish you could be there when we have a woman who is dejected, wondering what they're going to do, and we bring out a bag of knockers. They always bring a smile to their face at a difficult time and sometimes tears." Barbara said she doesn't need to be there to see it. She knows. Because she was one of them. How about that? How about that? Making change. How you doing over there, CAMS?
Not so good.
I feel like this podcast is just a torture chamber where I endeavor to make you cry.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't take that much effort, but they're happy tears. I'm happy that these women are in the world that are, you know, they're doing what they're doing.
They're doing great work. Yeah. But these acts of creative service can take so many forms. We subscribe to a great monthly e-newsletter. We've talked about it before. It's called the A to Z, and it's compiled and issued by a friend of the podcast, Brady Peters.
Hi, Brady.
As far as I'm concerned, what Brady Peters is sharing with his newsletter is an act of creativity as service. It is like a monthly bushel of sparks. It's beautiful the way that it looks. Just like it's so beautifully thought out. It's a bushel of sparks coming straight to your inbox every month. It's so great. And you can subscribe by going to theatoz.substack.com. And I'm going to spell it THEATOZ www.substack.com. So Brady organizes his stories from A to Z. N this month was Neighbors. Aww. And Brady included... are you going to start crying?
No, I don't know. I can't promise anything at this point.
Brady included this story that has been reported by the NPR reporter Laura Walmsley. Again, I love that name. It was about the Savitz family. They had moved to this close-knit, friendly neighborhood in Newton, Mass. About 3 months before having a baby. So they moved to this neighborhood. Then Glenda and her husband, Rafi Savitz, welcomed their new daughter, Samantha, into the world. And a week later, they learned that Samantha was deaf. Her mom, Glenda, said, "She was the first deaf person we had known. Their little baby, the first deaf person that they had known. So obviously it was a surprise and a challenge. We knew right away that we had to get involved in the deaf community, learn about the culture, and start getting fully immersed in American Sign Language. What the new parents didn't know was that their neighbors in this neighborhood in Newton, Massachusetts, would decide they needed to start learning sign language too."
Oh.
A neighbor named Jill McNeil said, "We really wanted to communicate with her and play with her. And since she couldn't learn our language, we wanted to learn hers." So Jill McNeil and three other neighbors quietly signed up for local adult education classes in American Sign Language. She said, "We met a teacher there we really loved. We asked if he would come here and teach more neighbors." So that's how it started. According to Glenda, who is the mom, 20 neighbors immediately signed up for the class. The classes have been such a hit that they are now, there are two offerings on two different weeknights, bringing the number of neighbors learning the language to about 40.
Oh my gosh.
As a result of that neighborly effort, Samantha moves with ease around the cul-de-sac where her family lives, says the neighbor, Jill McNeil, "We're really enjoying the whole process, not only learning of ASL, but the learning together. It's made our neighborhood a closer place." To me, that is an amazing act of creativity. And I just want to take a moment to show you this picture.
Pictures.
Of Jill McNeil, that's the neighbor, with baby Samantha.
Oh, what a sweetie.
What a cutie booty.
What? What a little nugget.
She's a nug. She's such a nug.
Oh, my God.
Well, you know, we call that a little POTUS. Is that a POTUS? I mean, our dog POTUS. So this neighborhood created a closer network that supported this child and expanded this child's sphere of communication. And I have to believe that the connection and the confidence Samantha derives from this experience has the potential to change her life.
Without a doubt.
And to change the lives of the people in this neighborhood community. And I would like to say more of that in the world, please.
Yes.
And now something completely different.
Okay.
This is from an article on Refinery 29 by Makita Rivas. As of this recording, legal proceedings against Harvey Weinstein are now underway. And one group of women wanted to make it clear precisely what the disgraced film producer is standing trial for. On Friday, donning all black, protesters showed up at the New York City courthouse where Weinstein's long-awaited criminal trial is taking place, and they created a flash mob. Inspired by feminist Chilean group Las Tisas, the flash mob was there to express support for and allyship with the women who have come forward against Weinstein, in addition to the millions of sexual assault survivors across the world. Based out of Valparaiso, Chile, Las Tisas wrote the song Un Violador en Tu Camino, which translates to A Rapist in Your Path, that quickly became a protest song for anti-sexual assault demonstrations everywhere, from New York City to Mexico to France. Cams, have you seen footage of this?
No.
It is a full-on chanting, dancing, like choreographed flash mob.
Wow.
And it is a marriage of creativity and protest and support and allyship. And I have to tell you, I fucking love it. It's just another way creativity and self-expression could live.
Yes.
And I would argue, make this world a better place.
And it is a way to channel the rage and passion.
That's right.
That you feel.
Yes.
And like physically channel it and physically release it and feel productive about it.
Yes.
Oh
yes.
My gosh.
Yes.
That's
and like
amazing.
You're not just like alone. Isolated, scared voice or angry voice.
Or Dave just asking everyone to have this conversation with him.
Yes,
with
you can come together and raise your voice.
Uh-huh.
Ooh, I love it. So a few years ago, I was hosting and appearing in a benefit for the ACLU / NYCLU called Broadway Stands Up for Freedom, which I've hosted for many years. Broadway Stands Up for Freedom is the largest single fundraising event for the NYCLU, and it was started 17 years ago by NYCLU head Donna Lieberman, who I want to interview on this
that's
podcast.
That's right, that's right.
For this reason. So it was founded by Donna, her daughter, Liana Stamper, who is an amazing woman, and Eric Bergen, who some of you may recognize as Blake from Madam Secretary, or he also played Bob Gaudio in the film of Jersey Boys. The event was created to highlight social injustices and civil rights issues through song and spoken word. And the whole event, Camion, is a marriage of creativity, self-expression, and social activism. So I'm hosting Broadway Stands Up for Freedom, and I wrote this piece called The Doing Song.
Yeah.
And I'd like to share a little bit of it with you now.
Yeah.
When we performed it, it had underscoring by Ryan Fielding Garrett and music direction by Hamilton music director Kurt Crowley. Hey,
ooh.
Kurt. And my backup singers were, because this is how I roll, Gavin Creel, Celia Keenan-Bolger, and Taylor Trench. So picture all of that, if you will.
So no big deal, you know.
So I shared the story. I told the story of Dave. Remember our friend Dave?
Yeah, yeah.
The one who was freaking out, the one who I thought might be addicted to the conversation about talking around it. Let's pick up there. Now, I just met you, Dave, and I don't know you, but if I may be so bold, I'd like to offer you something. And you can always tell me to go fuck myself, Dave, but I think I know what's going on here. But Dave didn't tell me to fuck off. In fact, his eyes lit up. He wanted to know exactly what I was proposing. So I shared with him a little formula that my meditation teacher, Emily Fletcher,
Hi, Emily.
Shared with me on November 9th, 2016, when I was freaking the fuck out like our good friend Dave. It's a four-step formula, and it goes like this. Step one. Pick a pressing issue, a need in your world, something that really lights your wick. Climate change, Black Lives Matter, people without homes, clean drinking water, injured koalas. If you can, shut your eyes for a second. If you're driving while you listen to this podcast, don't do that. But if you can, shut your eyes for a second, for real, right now. Shut your eyes. Think about the most pressing need in the world for you. It can be big. It can be small. It doesn't have to impress your neighbor. I know there's a lot. But just for the sake of this exercise, just pick one. Now at the count of three, open your eyes and say it out loud. Even if you're listening to this podcast on the subway, I challenge you. Say it out loud. Ready? One, two, three.
I didn't actually think you were going to ask me.
It's okay. They said it.
They said it out loud.
Beautiful.
Okay.
Beautiful,
oh,
everybody.
Okay.
Beautiful.
Everybody, great.
Okay. Now, step two, and I think this is important. You have to absolve yourself of the responsibility for the millions of other issues on the planet. Yes, be informed. But if you aren't going to do anything about a particular issue, don't get trapped into thinking you have to have a solution or a reaction to every crisis and every presidential tweet. It will only spin your wheels and wear you out. Like our good friend, Freaked Out Dave. Remember him? Step three, ask yourself, what are my unique gifts and talents? I bet you got a lot of them. Close your eyes again, unless you're operating heavy machinery, and consider, are you a great woodworker? Are you a gifted speaker? Are you a rocking belly dancer? Again, there are no wrong answers. Get weird, y'all. I know you got a lot of gifts. Just pick one you're really feeling. And at the count of three, I want you to open your eyes and I want you to say it out loud, even if you're sitting in the waiting room of the dentist. Ready? One, two, three. You just freaked out the person next to you. You magnificent weirdos. You do inspire me. Now let's review. Step one, pick a pressing issue. Step two, absolve yourself of saving the entire world. Step three, define your gifts and talents. And now step four, which of these gifts do you want to use right now? Not which gifts should you use, but which of these gifts do you really want to use?
Yeah.
Okay, let's put it all together. For instance, right now, are you a great organizer who is super passionate about square dancing and animal rights? Then organize the hell out of a square dance where all the proceeds go to an awesome organization that supports the puppies. That puppy square dance would be baller, y'all. Or right now, are you a gifted blogger who's passionate about crocheting and comforting the terminally ill? Then stitch up an Afghan to warm the toes of someone at your local hospice and then blog the shit out of that shit. Inspire others, mother pumpkins. Or maybe You're a writer-performer who wants to help somehow, but you're torn. You don't want to be absolved. You want to fight against the Muslim ban and stop and frisk, and you want to fight for transgender voting and reproductive rights. But how can you possibly tackle it all? Well, maybe you write a Spark about it and then share it out at Broadway Stands Up for Freedom concert or on the Spark File podcast. Look, everybody, it's happening. It's happening in real time. And this is the magical, tricky part. Like I told Dave, there is no one busier or lazier than me. But if you want to change the way you feel right now, you have got to do something. Yes. You've got to pick a thing, and then you have to do it. You have to contribute to making change.
Making change.
This is actually Emily Fletcher. Thank you, Emily's four-part process.
I mean, it's perfect.
For making change.
It's perfect.
So postscript, there was a post on the Facebook page for the Animal Rescue Collective Craft Guild from a woman named Lisa. She said, I'm feeling a bit down about my contributions to the Australian wildlife. I'm seeing wonderful crafters turning out dozens of beautiful items, and I'm still working on my first pouch because they apparently need the larger ones and they need to be crocheted with a single crochet with a small hook. I can't imagine that the half dozen that I will be able to make will make a difference. And then she had a crying kitty cat emoji. Aww. There were about 2,000 responses to Lisa's post.
Really?
Empathizing with her, cheering her on, telling her that those six things she made will make a difference to six animals and their carers. And a crafter named Tay Schutz made this point. If the 195,000 members of this group only made one item each, we would still have 195,000 items. You are making six. Obviously, not all members are making the same thing, but six is more than zero.
Oh,
zero times 195,000 equals zero. One times 195,000 equals 195,000. With a large group, little numbers make a huge difference.
Oh, I'm going to cry again. Yes.
That's my spark. Making change.
Oh my God. That's so good.
Oh, thanks, Cam.
And so true. And what a great way to get a handle on the emotions that run away with us.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Rein it in.
I was seeing pictures of koalas who clearly there was some singeing. There's been some injury. I was getting so upset and feeling so helpless to contribute. And then I'm like, no, there are ways to contribute. And I want to make this point. And they make the point on this website. If you can't knit, or if you can't sew or crochet or knit a Joey pouch, you can contribute money.
That's right.
If I'm really feeling super bummed, that's an option too.
That's
there
right.
There are all sorts of ways. But you know what's free? Showing up at the courthouse outside of Harvey Weinstein's trial and joining voices with those women and learning that dance and dancing my rage right out.
That's right.
So whether are a millionaire or a zero heir like me, there are ways. There are all sorts of ways to marry what lights you up with issues that also light you up and with talent, skills, making abilities, creativity, and self-expression that light you up, braiding it all together into one big, beautiful contribution to making the world a better place.
That is absolutely correct. And the line of thinking that says, but I'm just one person or I'm just making six things is exactly the thing that keeps so many people from taking action, you know, because you just feel insignificant.
That's right.
Not true.
And that's also true.
Like your voice
matters.
Brady
Peters, one person assembling the A to Z Substack, and that neighborhood of 40 people coming together to enrich themselves, but also to contribute to the community that is their neighborhood. And the reality for this child.
That's absolutely right.
It can take so many different forms, and it really, you get to choose. You get the luxury of choosing.
Can make change by making art.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Thanks, Suze,
I love it. I love it.
Want to take a break?
We'll take a break. Okay, I'll get a Kleenex.
The Spark Pod!
Okay, we're back, but I just want to show you, Cams, and maybe we can post this up on social media. These are some of the very clear instructions that they show you for how to make, for instance, wildlife pouches for little babies and big babies, and exact like patterning and how to make the liners and what's important about fabric choices and what's important about the way that you seam it, etc. But look at those babies.
Those sweet, sweet babies.
Those baby Joeys need those pouches.
Oh my goodness.
Possum Joeys, Wombat Joeys, Eastern Gray Joeys. So many Joeys.
So many Joeys. It's so sad and scary to think about what's going on there.
It's so upsetting, but I'm like, then if you are so sparked, do something about it.
That's right. Yeah. Do something about it.
Yeah. Pick a thing. Mm-hmm. Pick a thing and actually do it. I promise you. It won't solve the entire world's problems, but I promise you it will. It'll change the landscape of your day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. To actually Agreed. Do something.
That's right.
Not just think about it, not just talk about it, but do it.
Do something.
Yeah.
Suze, Cams. That's a good spark.
Thanks, Cams.
That's a really good spark.
What you got for me?
Well, my spark might have some strange
crossover.
Really? I'm not sure if it's good or not, but we're going to find out.
Oh, Cams.
We'll see. No. Not that my spark isn't good, but that the crossover. It might be awkward. I'm not sure, but we're going to find out.
Is it disparaging against Joeys? Joeys.
It's about not making change. No.
Your spark flies in the face of my spark.
Of activism. It's anti-activism. I'm kidding. It's not.
Did you say craftivism during the... Have we talked about craftivism?
I don't think we've talked about it. I think I said it somewhere.
I feel like you said it to me recently. And it was it during the badass cross stitch?
Craftivism? Yes. Because she calls herself a craftivist,
which delighted me.
That's right.
Anybody who engages with that spark I just shared is also.
They are craftivists.
There's some craftivists. I think Barbara Demarest of Knitted Knockers. Craftivist.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah.
Proud title.
When I was at the McDowell with Hunter Bell, we were in residency there writing what would become Now Hear This. And there was a wonderful, radical activist knitter who would create these pieces of art that were also, political statements. And so I remember they would knit or crochet. I can't remember what but they would make these pieces of, for instance, pink yarn barbed wire. And then they would take that to, like, if there was a protest somewhere, they would wrap it around the fence. These very strong, very cool, like amazing, thoughtful pieces of political protest through yarn craft. It was amazing.
Which is like old school, crafts and abilities
meeting
new world problem that needs to be solved.
Yeah, pretty hot.
Wow.
Good stuff.
Like real good stuff.
What you got
real
for
good
me?
Stuff. Have you ever watched that TV show Alone?
I don't know what that is.
I'm obsessed with this show.
What is it?
First, let me tell you that genuinely, I would go so far as to say that. Oh, nerd. But I think it illustrates one of the reasons why TV was invented, like to educate and entertain. That's right. I mean, that's what I think TV is good for, but obviously we use it for other things. But I think it's to educate and to entertain, to show you things that you can't personally do so that you might learn from other people's experiences. I mean, there's so much like crap reality TV programming. But to me, this is one huge exception to that rule. So the TV show Alone is on the History Channel.
Okay.
They're on season 7. I don't know when that's going to be.
I don't have this. I don't have the History Channel. I've never heard of this.
Okay.
Amazing. So
I'm going to tell you all about it.
It's something existing in the world and it's on season 7.
It's on season 7.
And I've never heard of it.
That's right. That's because there's a lot of fucking TV channels.
I know.
There's a lot of content.
I know. And I'm either happy or sad that I'm kind of out of touch with it because
I wish I could just find a way to generate like just the smart, cool stuff into one place. But there isn't really one channel or one, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like every place is so full of like all of the stuff. But anyway, so the TV show Alone is on the History Channel. They're on season 7. I don't know when that's going to air. I mean, technically, like they haven't announced that there is a season 7, but all signs are indicating that they're moving forward with the production of season 7. So it's just top secret. But I believe it's going to happen. So the idea of the show is that a group of individuals are brought to a remote location in the wilderness.
Is it a reality show?
It is a reality show.
Okay.
It is. They each have their own space and they're literally dropped off either by boat or helicopter in the wilderness. They have no contact with other human beings. So they're like at least 20 miles apart from each other, you know.
Okay.
And they have to survive in the wilderness. And that's all. There's no cameraman with them.
How are they filmed?
They document themselves with multiple cameras they have to take care of throughout the show. They have one
big
phone.
Job.
It is.
Yeah.
Like, no joke. People have injured themselves trying to deal with their camera. And then, you know.
They're alone.
They have one lifeline, like a phone that they can use to call the producers. If they call, though, they're tapping out.
Wow.
So it's not a call with a, hey, I have a question. No.
Can I have some avocado toast delivered?
No. No. You call and someone will come and get you and you're done. So besides that, like a medical team comes and checks on them, I think every 2 to 3 weeks. I don't know exactly what the interval is. Yeah. But the contestants know when that is. So like sometimes they'll say like tomorrow's the day, like the medical team will come tomorrow, you know, so they know when it is. But I'm not exactly sure or clear on like what the interval is.
Got it.
But they at these intervals, they get checked by a medical team. And if they don't pass the medical exam,
they're tapping out.
They get tapped out. Not by choice. People have broken down and cried, like, I can stay longer.
Oh,
I can stay longer.
Boy.
And they're like, no, you can't.
And I'm not sure, like, would they be yanked because of exposure or malnutrition or lack of water?
They've lost too much weight.
Okay.
So they're not getting enough sustenance.
Uh-huh.
In some cases, not to be too graphic, but people who like haven't had a bowel movement in a few weeks, because they're not getting enough fiber, like they check on these things because they're like, obviously we don't want you to do permanent damage to your body by being here. But that's the level of consequence. Like people are, they truly have to survive in the woods.
Why do people want to do this?
Okay. Well, we'll get into
that. Okay.
But the goal is...
There is nobody lazier or busier than, like, why?
That's right. You wouldn't be out there. But, and neither would I, but...
There's a certain type of personality that might want this challenge.
I mean, throughout time,
yes,
man has fascinated
You're
with self-reliance.
I enjoy creature comforts, but...
I am fascinated by the people who can do it.
I'm going to stop interrupting you because... Uh-huh. I want to know more.
Yeah.
And I just am getting in the way.
Okay. I'm going to tell you.
Okay.
I'm going to tell you more. I'm so prepared to tell you more. So the goal is to survive as long as possible.
Okay.
And that's it.
God, this is crazy, Camion.
Survive as long as possible in the wilderness.
If they're like, I'm in month 3, I'm in month 7, they can stay out there?
And they don't know how many people are left. Is it just down to me and someone else?
Is it
still
a competition?
Yes, I'm getting to that. The last man or woman standing gets $500,000. Like, it's a competition. You have to make it as long as possible.
And you have no idea if the competition, if the Hunger Games, if they're still, if you are nearing...
No one is trying to like.
I know no one's trying to assassinate you, but you'd have no idea how your competitors are doing.
You have to assume they're doing well. You just don't know.
Do you know at the outset how many competitors there are?
You do. Okay. And you meet them. And so everyone knows each other, but you're completely and entirely on your own. So it might be in the back of your mind that, like, oh, well, there's.
This is amazing.
It's so, so amazing. Okay. But first of all, let me tell you. the locations. The first few seasons were Vancouver Island, which is remote as fuck.
Yeah.
Excuse me. It's really remote. All of a sudden, I want to be polite. It's a really remote island. Up north.
Yeah.
And it's fucking cold.
Yes.
Patagonia, Northern Mongolia. They have, like, they're super, super remote, and they each have their own challenges. So you obviously have to study where you're going.
Like, baked into the, and do you know where you're going? Like, if your season is going to be Patagonia or whatever.
That's right.
You study up on it and learn what
natural
occurring proteins are.
What animals might be
edible.
edible.
Or predatory.
Looking for me. Exactly.
Oh,
who might eat me. Okay, so first of all, those locations, and they literally drop them off, give them their cameras, and see you later. So they're each allowed to bring 10 items, and there are long lists of things that you can choose from. So the dynamic there is fascinating because you might, you know, they cut, when they edit the shows, they cut in between people, and you'd be like, here's Susan, you know, at the lake trying to get fish. She did not choose to bring a whatever knife, you know, or whatever
hook,
she brought this
filament.
Because,
yeah.
So they can choose from, you know, everything, a shovel, a carabiner, a flashlight, a sewing kit, a hunting knife, wire to set traps, you know, like, but you have to choose carefully.
And I would think six seasons in, people can learn from prior seasons.
You would think, but it is always surprising. There'll be someone who like, I didn't choose.
I needed to bring this floral arrangement. Thing,
yeah. Because I've never had a problem lighting a fire. I'm like, but you've also never been in Mongolia.
In Patagonia. Like,
trying to start a fire.
Amazing. During the wet season.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So you have to choose carefully, and it is always fascinating. Or someone might be like, I chose a bow and arrow because I'm really good with it. Someone else is like, I chose fishing wire because I'm going to make fishing nets and I'm just going to fish, and that's going to be my thing.
Yeah.
But you learn, first of all, or are reminded of, the essentials of human life: food, water,
shelter,
heat, shelter, heat, you know.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's amazing to see what people choose to bring. Of course, they have to study the plant life we talked about, the local animals, figure out what tools would be most useful to them based on those things. They're allowed to build any other tools that they need out of anything they find. So if something washes up in the lake, like one season someone found like an old milk carton and used it like as a shovel, used it for a million purposes.
Vessel,
it was super, super.
Carry water. All, yeah.
So in terms of like creativity, you watch and see like what they do with so little.
How precious those, like an old milk carton that washes up on the shore, how precious that becomes.
Every item. And it's fascinating. So first thing they all have to do is survey the land and figure out like where they're going to build their shelter.
Can I just tell you, I'm sitting here enwrapped. I'm just like,
really? Because I feel like you're like, what's this show?
No, I am with you, and I'm taking a mental journey.
Yeah.
Again, I've never seen it. So it's all through your report. And I'm just like taking a mental journey of what this looks like, what it would be like to be on the inside of it.
I hope I'm doing it justice, but basically.
You're doing great.
Thanks. Thanks, because I love this show. But it, so they're all on Vancouver Island, for example, but you still get different situations. Someone might be dropped off where there's a field with berries in it within walking distance. And someone else might be like, I'm right here by this stream and I can catch fish all day long. You know, like there are different variables that they can't control. So I think they try to make the circumstances as equal as possible.
Yeah, it'd be hard though, because you can see how the berry person, the proximity to the berry person versus fish proximity person.
That's right.
Those calories could make the difference for
months. It could totally
months.
Make the calories. Yeah. Now, all of them do, I think, from what I can tell, they've all had access to water, but they have to, so they have to figure it out. So they get there, they get dropped off, and they're like, where is the water? Where will my shelter be safest? Right?
Yeah.
If you see bear tracks or poop from
scat,
animal, scat, you're like, okay, this piece of land is already
so
claimed
this
by someone.
Cave, not so good.
I don't think I'll go in this cave. So like some of them will set up a temporary shelter for like the first couple of nights. And that's where they're figuring out like what their situation is.
Oh my God.
But in terms of creativity, it's phenomenal because you see people building different, some people build entire log cabins over the course of it.
Oh,
fucking log cabins.
So those people
like
are there for a long time.
Multi-layer fireplaces so that like the fire doesn't catch their cabin on fire.
Wow.
So that they can dry their clothes over. Like they're incredible.
Those are people, those people have mad skills, and also they came to win.
They came to win.
Yeah.
And then other people set up like under a tarp and then maybe try to keep it warm, you know, with branches and things around it.
I'm putting my money on cabin.
But it is interesting because different situations, people end up winning that you're just sort of like, I can't believe that little shelter made it the whole way.
Interesting.
But like you said, the people who compete are pretty damn experienced and impressive. They're like
survivalists,
disaster preparedness trainers,
preppers.
Primitive technology instructors, Navy SEALs, homesteaders, hunting guides.
Yes.
Like these are people who are quite familiar with. And sometimes you'll see someone who's like an expert in plants and they'll go pretty far. Like one season, this woman like cut her leg and she knew like how to make a paste out of certain plants.
Hunger
and like
Games.
Exactly.
Yes.
And she survived. Like it's truly amazing. Like this isn't about like, let's see how long Laura and Susan can make it in the forest. Like it's when I say like this is TV programming in a smart way, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
The objective is not to like, oh, it'd be so fun to watch people flounder and fight with each other and freak out.
Not naked and afraid.
It is not naked and afraid. This is prepared people.
Yeah.
But this shows you as prepared as you are, who's really in charge? And that would be nature.
The wilderness. Yes.
The wilderness is in charge, right? So there's no planning that you can, like the elements. This is why the show is so good. Like you can't get around the weather. Like the weather will change with the seasons, obviously. So maybe you're watching and for the first 2 weeks, like Susan's been getting a ton of fish on the lake and she's doing just great.
Yeah.
Now the lake is frozen over. And what is Susan going to do now? She's either stored enough food or...
Because she didn't get the ice saw. She didn't select that as one of her...
She did not bring the ice saw. Or maybe a storm destroys your housing or rain gets everything wet and you can't get another fire going.
And you can't get dry. Oh my gosh.
And you can't predict animals either. So last year...
You can't predict animals either is the worst sentence ever uttered.
You can't. So last year, a man killed a single moose. And they're very conscientious. Like, I don't want to trigger anyone in terms of, you know, animals, but it's like, A, the animals have equal opportunity to eat the human as much as the human does. But they're all very, very respectful. And most of them are really clear that, like, I mean, they would hope to, like, it would be a dream come true to have an abundance of animals.
But I would imagine
they don't,
if you take down a moose, they're probably using every part of
the moose.
So
that's what I was going to say. He was so thrilled. He got a moose with a bow and arrow.
Oof.
He got himself, it was from far away. He got himself there. And keeping in mind, so he shoots it from far away. Other animals are going to say, hey, that looks good to me.
Yeah.
So he's got to get to that moose meat quickly and by sundown get back to his place. But so he knew how to preserve the meat, which was amazing, and he did. And he preserved the fat separately. He had found a can, fascinatingly.
Amazing.
And so he had a little jar of like lard and... He used, he used
every
bit.
Yeah.
It was incredibly respectful and they didn't like, it wasn't explicit or anything, but it was really, really amazing. And you just thought like, oh, He is set. He's going to coast.
Until?
He kept losing weight and more weight and more weight. It turns out moose meat is so lean. You can eat it every single day and still not get enough substance. And then
keto diet, yeah.
A badger stole his little can of fat. So he wasn't getting enough fat in his diet. So anyway, interesting. He also then eventually killed that badger. He went out.
Fuck you, badger.
At night. At night, alone with just like a headlamp.
And a bow and arrow?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God.
I think he had a hatchet. I don't want to get graphic, but.
Oh my God.
That was one of the more brutal things. Like, you typically don't see that. But it's
you
more
don't see
often,
that every day.
It's more often that you see, and they didn't show, like, they don't show
of course.
That. But it's more often that you see people, like, in their tent and a bear is circling it.
Oh, no.
And the next morning, they're like, I think I'm done. I think I'm good
tapping
here.
Out.
I'm tapping out.
Just side spark before we lose mm-hmm, it. Mm-hmm. I just, a spark that I have that I want to make sure is captured in perpetuity on this recording is that I think a great nickname would be Moose Meat. Continue.
Awesome.
Hey, Moose Meat.
Hey, Moose Meat. God. Awesome. So, yeah, so the animals are unpredictable.
Unbelievable.
You see people like accidentally cut themselves with their knife. They're done. They
That's
have
it.
To tap out.
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
So,
do you know how quickly, like, if they summoned, if they were like, I'm tapping out.
Well, that's the other
how
thing.
How quickly
Suze.
Can they get retrieved?
Not so quickly.
Oh no.
So you got to think ahead like that. If you're like,
spoiler, has anybody died on
this? No
show?
One's died.
Okay, great.
No one's died.
Good, good, good.
No, thankfully. But hypothermia,
yeah.
If you,
you could
fall in
toes
the frozen
on this
lake,
show.
Which yeah. someone has, someone like fell in the frozen lake.
So dangerous.
Got themselves out. They, it was at night. And so he shivered through the night and he knew every bit of what hypothermia could do to your body. So he sat there
assessing.
On camera assessing. Yeah, they came. They couldn't get him at night. So they were like, we will be there first that you know, at sunrise.
Oh, but, my God.
So the stakes are high. It's
I'll
not,
say.
You know, like the bachelor, am I going to get a rose or not? The stakes are pretty damn high. And the intelligence, the problem solving, and frankly, the creativity that they have to use to survive in the wilderness. So some of them tap out because they know they're not getting enough food, or they injure themselves, or they get spooked by animals. People have accidentally burnt down their shelter.
Oh, no.
They've fallen in a freezing cold lake.
Oh, don't do it.
Like, there's no coming back from some of that. So you have to tap out. But the thing that truly amazes me is the number of people who tap out because they cannot take the time alone.
That amazes you. That does not surprise me at all. As you were talking, you said that thing about people sitting in their shelters, and you finished the sentence by saying, like, with a bear circling, and that's when they tap out. I thought you were going to say just sitting there in their shelters, sitting with their own thoughts, and they were like, that's worse than a bear circling my shelter.
That is exactly right. And I can't. Like, it's hard to believe, because when you watch them, these are some of the people who are like, cool. So I'm building a log cabin. I'm going to upgrade the fireplace that I made myself. I'm building an outhouse. I'm building a workout center for me to like work out in the mornings.
Really?
Yeah. One guy did,
like,
but it's actually
burn more calories. That's crazy.
That's exactly why most people don't do that. Cause they're like, mostly
it's a terrible use of your energy.
Yeah. You want to conserve your energy and your calories.
But it would give you something to do to fill the time.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
So here are these people who like make their own essentially like small town, you know, and you just
population
think like,
one.
Oh, population one, they're doing great. And then they just can't stop thinking about their family, or their own thoughts are driving them crazy.
Or a spaghetti dinner.
And a spaghetti dinner. Yeah. They can't take the loneliness and they tap out.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just think I wouldn't last 6 hours. I would not last past sundown.
It also reminds me of the conversation we had during the Cat Dancers Spark, which is great documentary filmmaking, and that can live as a film, it can live as a TV show, clearly, is like a bathysphere where we get to, in the warmth, dryness, right, and safety, climb
with
inside.
With your spaghetti dinner.
While eating, sitting on the couch, eating, yes, there's a couch in my bathysphere, yes, eating, yes, our spaghetti dinner, and we get to be immersed in this experience,
right,
this adventure.
That's right.
These
I don't
crazy
have
remote
to come
locations.
Face to face with a bear to understand what just that who's in charge in the wilderness,
yes,
you know? And
yeah.
I think that, to me, it's fascinating.
And it sounds like it's done in a way, if you're saying that you feel like this is what television was built for, that it must be done. I cannot wait to see this goddamn show.
I mean, I really built it up, but to me,
but you love
I
it.
Think it's to learn,
I have
reflect,
so many questions.
Right?
Yeah.
So that got me thinking about Henry David Thoreau.
Like, oh, sure.
So self-reliance, right? The things the soul needs don't cost a thing. It's minimalism. This is like self-reliance as a spiritual quest. That's like his take on it. And this show made me realize how,
wow,
woefully ill-prepared I am for any kind of natural disaster.
I'm with you.
Any kind of disaster, basically. And if I had to rely on myself alone, I would be completely screwed. I'm not proud of this. Like, it just has me thinking about self-reliance. Mm-hmm. Like, this show is like, So, little sidebar into history. 1841, Ralph Waldo Emerson wrote the essay titled Self-Reliance, where he outlined the importance of living a life built by oneself. Follow your own thoughts and your own opinions, not the religion of the times. And he inspired his friend, Henry David Thoreau, to live alone in the woods for more than 2 years in a house he built with his own hands. And while he was there, he wrote the book Walden.
Mm.
Any of this like sound familiar?
Sure.
So he talks about the importance of living independently, living on his own, off the land, building and creating with his hands. He believes people spend too much time trying to keep up with others in lifestyle, clothing, opinions,
yes,
et cetera,
yes, yes,
consuming. And he believes that it's essential that you listen to your own thoughts, your own opinions before anyone else's. About spending time alone, he said, I find it wholesome to be alone the greater part of the time. To be in company, even with the best, is soon wearisome and dissipating. I love to be alone. I never found the companion that was so companionable as solitude.
He should have been.
He was an introvert.
I do. And I also think he would have been a great contestant on Alone.
Alone, right?
Wow.
Right? So I often love to romanticize this notion, obviously, of living off the land in the woods.
Yes.
I don't think I'm alone in that.
Yeah.
I love the idea of it. Emerson and Thoreau are all about self-reliance as a spiritual quest, and I
fascinated
long for that.
Yeah.
Obviously not badly enough to do it.
but the idea of it.
Yeah, but we've had conversations about just how long we'd be able to go like without our telephone, like a retreat maybe.
Yeah.
I could maybe go 3 days maybe, you know, like a few days. I think I would do okay with that, but I would want a pen and paper. That's the other thing. I watch this and I'm just like, oh my gosh, I would go crazy without
something
a pen and paper there.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
But this idea of being alone, like being maddening to people, really interests me. Like,
interesting.
I don't think I would go mad, but then again, you just never know. Right?
I don't know, Cams. I mean, I think we're both introverts, but I don't know.
But that's a lot of aloneness, right?
It's a lot of aloneness, and it does. It reminds me of when. Do you remember some years back when power below 34th Street was knocked out by the hurricane?
Uh-huh.
And I lived below
31st Street. Mm-hmm.
And so power was off for, I'm going to say, a week. And before the hurricane came, I packed my refrigerator with food and ice. It was packed out with ice. So it was like, I pre-made the food so it would keep. I was ready to go.
Mm-hmm. That's preparedness
and
right there.
I was by myself and I was like, I have to like batten down the motherfucking hatches and get ready for this. And I did. And then the power was out. I was alone. No cell phone, no computer. It was one of the times in my adult life when I have been, I mean, I was still in a city.
Yeah, you could go.
But there was
outside,
a lot of, I don't want to say devastation, but there was a lot of like down power lines, down trees in Manhattan.
You couldn't call for delivery.
Oh, God, no. No, exactly. None of that. But this is the closest that I have come to this aloneness. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you, after the sun sets and there's not daylight coming through the windows anymore, reading by lantern, candlelight, whatever, becomes very difficult. And I would go to bed extremely early because I was so bored and so alone and so cut off and so isolated. And it was, even for an introvert, it was tough.
Nothing romantic about it.
I toughed it out for quite a while. And then I remember reaching out to, Heidi Blickenstaff, who lived above 34th Street. And I was like,
hey,
can I please come and just sleep on your couch?
Oh my gosh.
In order to have some light and some companionship.
Yeah.
And like charge.
Oh my God.
And some cell phone contact.
Who could blame you for that?
It was intense.
Who could blame you?
Yeah.
But I think like in terms of self-reliance, like the way the world is going now, it feels like being self-reliant is more of a necessity, obviously, than a romantic idea. Like the possibility, like whether you believe that foreign governments are hacking into our banking systems and we're going to wake up one day, you know, zeroed out and penniless, back on the barter system, farming our own lands. Mm. Like if you think that, or if you're watching the weather patterns and climate change and are convinced that nature is going to deliver a whopping blow, making us all dependent on our survival skills, like either way, you know, the preppers seem to me, whereas I once thought that was a bit crazy, to me seem
now like, you're like, who do I know that I can be friend who's a prepper?
wise people. And like, I did think this was a ridiculous idea years ago, but
not so
in the
crazy.
Past few years, I've seen tornadoes in Brooklyn, a hurricane hits New York City.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember a few years ago, CNN ran a documentary about the floods caused by Hurricane Katrina. It was like the 5-year anniversary of the flood of the storm. So I think, of course, they had used all the news footage in those intervening years. But so on the 5th anniversary, they put together a documentary that was using all of footage from people who had stayed, like all their viewers' footage, like sent in. So the people who had stayed to, quote, ride it out in New Orleans and, the pictures and the video that they had taken, and it was so powerful.
Yeah.
What they talked about in the documentary that I will never forget. I actually have a short film, like a draft of a short film sparked by this. What they talked about was people's homes being flooded.
Yeah.
And they, of course, they would go to a higher floor and a higher floor and then had to like out the window and up onto their own roof.
Oh my gosh.
But they spoke about the many, many people who were not strong enough to pull themselves out.
Oh, no.
Not strong enough to lift their own body weight.
Oh.
And that became a goal in my mind. Always be able to lift your own body weight.
Oh, my gosh.
But, like, literally, parents with kids and how do you get them
and
out?
Oh, my gosh.
And this is another form of like self-reliance, right? Of being strong enough and figuring out like how will you survive.
The spark is motivating me.
So they showed like a neighborhood where four young men, they were maybe 20 years old, they had a canoe and they went around trying to save all the people who were sitting up on their roofs. But they could only do one person at a time.
Yeah.
So one person in a canoe, they walk that canoe, you know, 10 miles down and then come back with it to save one more person.
Yeah.
I mean, it was horrifying, truly horrifying. Like I'm sure I'm just tip of the iceberg on just how bad everything was. But to me, that was scary as shit to think about like one major storm,
one
like
big
that.
Storm. Yep.
That's right. So we don't know how to like grow things find things, live off the land without help from our phones or without calling for help. And this kind of is turning into a dark spark, and I didn't mean it to, but it is this concept of self-reliance. So I think you can see why I am so enthralled by these people who can live. I think it's very empowering to know that you're capable.
Yeah.
Even though those variables we talked about, from the weather to animals, like there are variables outside of your control that could take you down and you wouldn't be able to survive. That's like in a best case scenario where you know how to build your own home and start a fire and make your own food and grow your own food or catch your own food. There are still variables that you can't control. And I'm like, I'm not even at the build your own fire phase, right?
Yeah.
So what do we make of all this?
What do we make of it, Cams?
Well, I think, first of all, there's a reason why man versus nature is such a powerful storytelling genre.
Yes.
I mean, because of exactly that.
Tale as old as time.
Tale as old as time. Yeah. They're just things you can't control, and Mother Nature is larger than us all, you know? So I think there's endless amounts of sparks in the exploration of man versus nature. But I also think it's ripe for a powerful message about climate change, like finding a way to affect social change with a powerful story of survival steeped in like the very real facts of climate change. Mm-hmm. I don't know what that is, but I do think that there's a lot there.
You're onto a spark there.
Yeah. I also think there's a story to be told about Thoreau and Emerson and their like their belief in self-reliance and their friendship. I was taught about each one of them separately, like in school. But I was unaware of how deep their influence was on each other and other people at the time. They were kind of an odd couple, like needling each other. Thoreau was born into a blue-collar family and wanted to earn Emerson's respect. He was really passionate and empathetic. And Emerson was like uber intellectual and ran with a bit of a snobby crowd. But in the end, like they enjoyed their continual sparring. They were always arguing. They were happy about it. I also didn't know that Thoreau took a really strong stance against slavery. I had no idea. He believed...
Side spark.
He believed in the idea that America like was a continuing revolution, but he was appalled and couldn't believe that we were living in a world where his freedom was celebrated, but millions of people were captive as slaves. So he felt betrayed by the country because they hadn't yet abolished slavery. And I don't think people learn about Thoreau as much as they, like, I don't think they learn that detail about him as much as they learn about, he went into the woods and he built a cabin and, you know. You could try an experiment. You could head into the woods yourself, like maybe just a glamping trip. See what 12 hours of silence might do to your mind.
That reminds me of the spark that we did about how to break up with your cell phone.
That's right.
And where that writer from the New York Times kind of took one for the team and did just that.
That's right.
Like detached from technology and went and spent a weekend, I believe, camping.
That's right.
And talked about like boredom and what else is there to engage the mind. I think that is a very interesting way to dip your toe into this.
I do too, because I think that we might all be surprised. I can sit here in you know, semi-judgment of someone who's like, I can't take being alone.
I'm in no judgment of it.
You're a better person than I.
I've always suspected as much.
I know, but it's true. But I've always been like, what are you talking about? You built your own. You've got a camp there. You're doing better than everybody. No. Like, stick it out. But I do think it would be really interesting to know what
are you allowed to bring a book? Is that one of the things that on
I
your
never
list?
See anyone with a book?
Yeah, I guess if you had 10 items, a book would be a real luxury.
A book would be like, what were you thinking? It was a How to Survive in the Wilderness.
Engaging
book.
The brain is so.
I know that's why I think a pen and paper.
Yeah,
but
then it gets wet, or then a badger scurries away with it, and then where are you?
And then what happens? Henry David Thoreau said this: I went into the woods because I wished to live deliberately, to front only the essential facts of life and see if I could not learn what it had to teach, and not, when I came to die, discover that I had not lived. And I think there's really something to that.
Yeah. What a spark. I've got some thoughts about the spark. Some things that I thought about while you were speaking are, I heard many, this is half, here's a half-baked spark for you. Many years ago, I remember hearing that there was an order, like a monastic order, and there, one of their rites of initiation is that they take one of these candidates for whatever this order is of brotherhood or whatever, and they drop them somewhere in the world with no money, no, there. This is, I think, is pre-cell phone, like none of that. And their rite of initiation is to find their way back.
Yeah.
So a little twist on this. It's not just about endurance, like how long can you last in the woods, but it's how can you find your way back, connect with people, and how you know, and to make your way in that sense.
I think that Eagle Scouts also,
they do something like that?
I think they take you into the woods, and I think it's a quest kind of thing. But I think you have to survive in the woods like a night or two nights and find your way back to a certain place.
That's amazing. And I probably would not fare well, but who knows when the, you know, when the
I just hits the honestly, road. I think about the self-confidence that would come along with if I had to build a trap to catch an animal so that I could survive. Could I do that? If I needed to figure out how to grow a garden in a foreign like place, would I know what's edible and what's not edible?
Man.
Would I have the strength to chop logs and build them into
everything
a
you're saying? I'm like, no, I'd be dead. No, I'd be dead.
Right?
No, I'd be dead. So
and I just think like there's something to having the confidence, even if you never have to use those skills.
Yeah.
What if you had them just in your back pocket?
You know what all this spark brings up for me? It's somebody that we both know and love who has some of these abilities.
I know it. It's Nathan.
And I have to say, I love it. We joke about it in our house. The phrase "a bit of a prepper" is something that we've bandied about. But his, he can do all of that. Like, you know, people that, you know, people like Nathan. He can do that thing where he does really remote winter camping, where he goes to extremely remote locations and can do like extreme camping in extreme circumstances.
Yes.
So he has those skills.
Yep.
He can, like, he's an amazing archer with bow and arrow.
Oh my God. You'll be okay.
When the zombie apocalypse comes.
Yeah.
But he just has a lot of forethought about, like, we have all sorts of like food that can last in our house. And depending on how preppish he's feeling, like, we have a lot of water stored and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm studying on growing our own
vegetables. Yeah, you grow veggies.
Even throughout the winter, things like that. So that is heartening to me. That's one. What
I
do you make
you
of it?
I think you guys are going to be fine.
We'll see.
I really do. No, I mean,
but
I've thought about
thing.
That.
When, if, not when, gosh, I don't mean to be so apocalyptic, but if something happens, like a major weather event or something, I feel like it's one of those things where the minute that, for instance, we run out of propane, we're not in great shape. Like, it's, we don't have all those skills.
Do you have a generator?
We do.
Yeah.
We do.
That's good.
Do you have a generator?
No, but we've talked about it.
I know. Isn't it funny what becomes sexy as you get older? Generator. Ooh, a generator. In any event, I love that he has those skills. And your spark inspires me to want to, instead of just like relying on him and like, you know, happily teasing him about it, to do things like have a better understanding of what we have at our disposal, what we don't have. And to also, I loved what you said about being able to lift my own body weight.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is something that I may have been able to do at one time, but right now, maybe not so much.
Right.
So like, using that as motivation for my daily workout. I think that is a fantastic thing. That's a great spark. It also reminds me of shows that I love, which I think are an incredibly great use
of television.
Things like Prairie House.
Yes.
And do you know those series?
Yes.
Prairie House, Manor House. It basically right. where they put people in historical, these on PBS. Right. We may have talked about it on the show.
I actually know someone who was on one of those.
Shut up.
Yeah.
You're kidding.
Uh-huh.
Do you know which one? Prairie House?
What's the third? Is there a third one?
It's Prairie House?
It's Colony. House. It's the Colony one where they have to build a colony. Yeah. Yeah.
How'd they do?
I think okay. They were in more than one season.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
The thing that I loved about that show is they put people in historical contexts mm-hmm. and they assessed like based on how many crops they canned and put away in the root cellar, etc.
That's right.
Would they have survived the winter? How long would their stores have lasted? I think we might have talked about this during the Laura Ingalls Wilder episode, maybe, or maybe we didn't.
I don't think so. I don't know. To me, yes, that's exactly the use of television.
So it was fun to hear modern day people really talk about the realities of mm-hmm. the day in, day out lifestyle and hardships of people in historical context that was not that long ago.
That's right.
I just
have you
loved
ever
it.
Lifted, you know, like a cast iron pot that you have to like full yes. of water that you're trying to boil enough potatoes yeah. for the family. Yeah. I mean, this is not light housework duties.
No, this will give you some serious yes. guns. Yes. And then I don't know. I guess what I'm the biggest spark that I take away, the biggest what do you make of this that I make of this is the desire to be more self-reliant and to do some of those things that I've been interested in
That's
living
right.
on the side of a mountain, like yes. growing my own food throughout the winter.
Yes.
Things like that.
Yeah.
Like being able to lift my own body weight, being better at cooking meals from whole ingredients.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
Just things like that. It's a yep. little pioneery.
No, I love it. I mean, obviously that's what sparks me about this.
Yeah. If I don't have to, I don't want to give up my electric blanket.
No.
But right now I don't have to.
You don't have to.
But just to like, and I don't want to live in fear.
That's right.
But I do love the idea of living from this point forward, and so many of our sparks have flowed into this for me, mm-hmm. but just like strong, keyed in, yes. able to be self-reliant.
Yes.
Like and also this ties in another spark, getting back to those things that break us up with our screens and cell phones, like yeah. doing puzzles together.
Yes.
Reading
yes.
together in the evening. Things
That's right.
Like, just things like that.
Yeah. That's exactly for me what this spark is about, and doing it all not from fear, but from self-empowerment.
Yeah.
And how it feels to know that A, you have the strength to do it, you have the knowledge to do it. And then frankly, all of those situations are creative problem solving. So you've got the ability to think creatively, and survive.
And when we're not doing that, we'll definitely be watching, starting with season one, Alone. On the History Channel?
On the History Channel.
I'm so into it. How have I never seen this?
I don't know.
Good
I
Lord.
I really don't
well,
know.
Well, I'm in for a treat.
Yay!
I've got six seasons to unpack and
then you can read
out.
Walden.
And when I'm not watching Alone, I can read Walden by candlelight.
That's right.
You're so classy. I think that's it.
I think it is.
Oh, we hope this put another bunch of sparks in your file. Listen, if there's a spark you'd like us to explore, or if you've taken a spark and fanned it into a creative flame and you'd like to share it, won't you email us at thesparkfile@gmail.com or submit it through our website? You know what? That's even better. We love it. Submit it through our website, thesparkfile.com. Do it. Don't not do it. Do it.
We'll even take your feedback. But you know the price of admission. First, you got to share a creative risk that you have taken recently.
And be sure to subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your podcast. Subscribe, rate, 5-star review it. If you like this podcast, would you please share it with people you love? It makes a huge difference. If you didn't like it, in the words of legendary drag queen Alaska Thunderfuck, bye.
Bye. If something tickles your fancy and gets your creative juices flowing, we're writing you a forever permission slip to make that thing that's been knocking at your door it's your turn to take a spark and fan it into a flame.
You got to creatively attack it. You got to costume rack it. You got to do like Brady Peters and A to Z substack it.
You got to take it and make it. Bye.
Sparks.
When I bump into something that inspires me, I dump it in my spark file. Could be something that I want to make or how I want to be. I pump it in my spark file. I jump into my spark file. Let's open up the spark file.